Morning. There's a story in Matthew chapter 25, starting in 14th verse, I'm going to start with. Matthew 25, starting in 14th verse. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And to one of them he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. To every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth, and hid his Lord's money. After a long time the Lord of those servants cometh, and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thee into the joy of the Lord. Then he had which received 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there hast thou that is thine. And the Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and kept it. Then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. We'll stop right there. We're familiar with this account, where the 3 men are given different amounts of money. What I'm looking at on this today, I'm not going to get into a big discussion of this. It's just the start of my lesson, but do you think the 2 men that received the 5 and the 2 had the same fear that the man that received the 1 had? I think they probably did. Did they not know that he was a man that would go sow where he had not sown, and reap where he had not sown, or reap where he had not sown? They knew he was that way, but they did not let that affect their actions. What was the problem here? They all had abilities. He would not have given them the money if they didn't have the abilities. The problem is one of them let fear overcome his abilities. The other two, they had to have known what the master was like. So they knew they better come up with some extra money to make him happy. Because I'm sure they have seen him. I'm putting things into the scriptures. I don't know if I should or not. But I'm sure they'd seen him be rather rough with people that he didn't make money off of or didn't give him return on investment. So they let their abilities show what they could do. The other man let fear rule his heart, and he hid the money, and he paid a dear price for it. Okay, I've beat him into the ground already. Don't need to pick on him anymore, because I am him sometimes. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 6. Hebrews 13, 6. So that we may boldly say, The Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Well, that one came out of left field, didn't it? We talked about the 3 men and their talents. And now I'm saying, so that we may boldly say, The Lord is my helper. I will not fear what men shall do unto me. Because I think that's what I need to look for on a daily basis in my life. The fact that I wake up in the morning and I say, I may boldly say, The Lord is my helper. How do I get through the day? I get through the day with the Lord being my helper. I will not fear what men shall do unto me. I had a couple stressful times this week, and there were man-made stress brought on by myself. In 25 years of doing my job, I've always been scared that I'm going to wake up some morning and I'm going to hear there was a fire somewhere and a restaurant burnt to the ground. Well, I don't work at Montana Mike's. But boy, I was sure happy that I don't work at Montana Mike's when that building caught fire the other day and burned to the ground. Because then you start wondering, was it something I did? Is it something I could have done differently? Did I bypass something? Because I've had fellow employees in the past years that have had to go to court and testify on behalf of what we did or what we didn't do to at a job site. And that would be scary if I had to do that. I hope in my last 6 years with this company, I'm retiring in 6 years, by the way. No, I'm not. Lisa goes, oh, no, you're not. In my last 7 or 10 years, whatever I've got, I hope I don't have to ever do that, because that would be scary. But I do live with that fear that, you know, every time I walk out, you know, am I going to wake up the next morning and find out something happened in that business? But I'm able to say the Lord is my helper. Do I do that on a daily basis when I go about living my life for Christ? Do I live in fear that something I've said, something I've done, is going to be defame the name of Christ or my ability to say that I serve Christ? And that's something I need to work on a daily basis. But if I remember that I may boldly say he is my helper, I will not fear what men can do to me. I will not fear if they laugh at me. I will not fear if they deride me. I will not fear what they can do to me, because God is my helper. The Lord is my helper. The key word in this is the word I. Because I'm the only one that controls that. Christ gave me everything I need. God gave me everything I need to live, to survive, to be happy. The problem is, I look for better things. I look for other things. I was a little down the last couple of weeks because I thought, you know, with this COVID-19 thing, they quit giving out bonus raises at work because they just stopped doing reviews and things. Well, I thought, you know, my raise was due the end of June, and I didn't think I'd got one. Well, silly me, I didn't look at my paycheck. They gave me my raise on June 25th. I just didn't know about it. I thought my paycheck looked a little different. I wondered, maybe I'm working harder. Maybe some of my deductions are not I'm not taking as many deductions out anymore. But no, they've given me my increase. Now, it ain't very much, but it's enough. It makes a difference. But I was fearful that I wasn't going to get my raise this year. And that was silly, because I made it for the last year on the same money. Why would I think I need any more money to make it now? But I get involved. The big Doug gets involved, and he worries about it. I fear what man can do to me. I don't remember that Christ is my helper, and he will get me through. What is fear? I looked it up, and fear is an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous and likely to cause pain or threat. So I live in a state of fear because I'm worried about what things can happen to me. I'm going to mess these words all up, so just bear with me. I ain't going to try to spell them on the board. One of them's about this long. Seven of the most common phobias, one of them said it was pterohymenophobia. It's fear of flying. I have that. I have a fear of flying. So why do I sit at home most evenings watching the Smithsonian Channel? And there's a show called Air Disasters. I'm just enamored. The planes crash. Sometimes people walk away. Sometimes the whole crew dies and everybody dies. I have been told not to watch that show in front of my grandson right now because we're getting ready to fly to Florida, and he is not liking the idea of flying. Blake is not liking the idea of flying. So I'm told not to have that show on when he's around. But why do I want it on? That's just going to build up my fear. Because now I'm thinking, okay, something's going to go wrong. You know, the tail's going to fall off that airplane. I've seen maybe one show where the tail fell off the airplane. But it could happen. So I have a fear of flying. Claustrophobia, fear of enclosed spaces. You know, I'm fine if I'm in an attic that's wide open. But you put me under a house where I'm crawling in the floor joists are right here, I'm scared to death. Even at work, I'm scared to get in some pieces of air, some areas. I got a couple ovens I work on that I've got to lay in and crawl underneath them to get to them. And I get a little worried, what's going to happen if this legs that have been there for 40 years suddenly collapse on this oven and it falls down on me? Or what if everybody locks the building, turns the lights off, and I'm underneath this piece of equipment? I got claustrophobia. I got fear. If Mary Ellen's on the web today, I miss you, Mary Ellen. I'm glad you're watching, but I hope you're seeing the humor in this, because I like to see you when you're sitting here and you can smile while I'm talking. There's entomophobia, a fear of insects. I don't got that one so much. I ain't worried about insects. Now this one, ophidiophobia, fear of snakes. I definitely got that one. We don't even go there. In fact, I'm thinking about that movie, Snakes on a Plane. What am I going to do if I get on that plane and there are snakes on that plane? Can I throw that many phobias together? I don't know. I don't want to laugh about the whole service, but you know, I got to remember God's there with me, getting me through these things. Cyrophobia, fear of dogs. A fear of a dog will freeze a child. It'll freeze a mailman. It better freeze me sometimes, because sometimes dogs can hurt you. Astrophobia, fear of storms. I'm the kid that when I was growing up hated storms. I would lay in bed at home with my three brothers, and I under the covers, pillows over my ears, because I didn't want to hear the storms. Now I'm the one out looking for the tornadoes, much to my wife's chagrin. There's a tornado in Runnels, so I'm in Vandalia. That ain't Runnels. But I have fear of storms. Tyrannophobia, fear of needles. And then I have a new one that I didn't find in the book. It's left turnophobia. My family will laugh about this one. I have a fear of turning left. When I'm sitting in an like a side street, and I've got to cross traffic going like this to turn here, I'll turn right, go down, find a place, turn around, and go back. I have had so many technicians laugh at me for doing that because I have left turnophobia. I don't want to turn left. Now, all that put aside, we had our moment of joy, jocularity there. Fear is a true thing in our lives. I sat back there this morning, fearful of getting up to speak this morning, and I've been speaking for 30 years. Well, we've been married 35 years, at least 40 years, because I was speaking before that. But I still sat back there scared to death to get up and give a lesson. And I seem to think there probably are a lot of people that have that problem. They're fearful once they go to get up to have to speak. Fear is a legitimate part of our daily lives. I go to work every day fearful that I'm going to do something wrong. I had my review the other day, finally got it, and I always say that they say I'm doing a good job. I'm the top four producer in the company right now. You know, my inventory was in $300. I did everything right. But I just, when before it was over, the guy said, you know, you don't have anything to worry about. And I said, well, I usually judge that by the fact I haven't been called to the boss's office, John's office, or Gary's office. If I get called to one of those two offices, because I saw a technician one time get called in the office, and when he walked in, all of them were sitting in the break room or the meeting room waiting to talk to him, and that was the last time we saw him. So you have that fear that you're going to do something wrong. And, you know, that's I do that in my daily life, but I need to remember in my spiritual life that, yes, I'm going to make mistakes, but don't live in the fear that I'm going to make mistakes, because God is able to deliver me through that. He is able to get me through it. Does God expect me to be perfect? I hope not, because he's going to be sorely disappointed, because I ain't going to be perfect. Just the fact I said ain't tells you I ain't going to be perfect. Okay, fear is a legitimate part of our daily lives. COVID-19 has frozen most of this country in fear. It's frozen a lot of us in fear. It's frozen me in fear sometimes. But yet, I'm so far into it now, I'm looking for the end of the rainbow. I think it's so close to being over that I'm not worried about it now. But there are people that are so scared, they won't even come out of their houses. They won't associate with anybody. Don't want to knock anybody, but they're so frozen, they'll drive in their car by themselves with a mask on. You're by yourself in your car. Take the mask off. Okay, not getting into masks. But that just kills me when I see that happen. Impending medical procedures place us in a state of fear. I don't have any medical procedures coming up, but I know when I did have some coming up, I was in a state of fear for a long time. Because I'm not a young man anymore. You know? How am I going to recover from that? But I'm young enough. But we live in a constant part of our daily lives being in fear, the fear of what we can do. The scripture tells us there's no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear has torment. He that feareth is not perfect in love. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear. The perfect love of Christ should cast out the fear in my life. But I think I'm living a pipe dream if I believe that's going to happen all the time, because I am going to have fear in my life. I am going to be scared. But what happens is when I let that fear drive me away from the goal that I'm looking forward to, the goal of serving Christ and serving God. Christ gave us a perfect way to escape from our fear, from fears in our life. The problem is that I am not willing to let go of that fear that I am not perfect. You know, I wasn't perfect when I came to Christ and salvation. I was perfect after I did it, but yet I've made a lot of mistakes since then. But yet those sins have been washed away because of the love of Christ and because of the sacrifice that He made for me. You know, if I mess up at work, they're going to remember it for the next 11 months till my next review. And they're probably going to say, you remember that time you did this and it cost us this much money? You know, that may cost me a little bit on my raise or my increase. But God doesn't say to me, you remember that time you let that word slip? You know, okay, you're one step below the rest of them now. No, I just got to go say, I'm sorry I did it. Put me back on the same level as the rest of them. The problem is I'm fearful that He won't do that for me. And that scares me that I have that fear in my life. I am not and never will be on my own be perfect, but Christ makes up the difference. I will never be a perfect person, but I'm doing the best I can, and Christ makes up the difference. Make me know Your presence, Lord, the King of glory here. You know each thought and action, hope, anxiety, and fear. How can I hide from Thee? When God is near, all the world seems far away. When God is near, every fear is set aside. When God is near, how can I stray? How can I falter? I'll stay upon the altar. I know my God is near. Make me know Your presence, Lord, when I feel so alone. You know each trial and pain. Oh, why can I not see Your hand firmly guiding me? Oh, how can I entrancing be when You are very near to me? When God is near, all the world seems so far away. When God is near, every fear is set aside. When God is near, how can I stray? How can I falter? I'll stay upon the altar. I know my God is near. It's a song I hear on the radio quite often. But it's a good song. I need to remember that God is near. You know, not everybody's near to me all the time. But God is always near to me. God is always near enough that I can just reach out and touch Him. There's a story that I heard relayed on the radio about, I think we've heard it here before, the young boy that's in a sandbox, and he's playing, and he sees a rock. He tries to dig that rock out of the sandbox, and it's a big rock. And he finally gets that rock broke free, and he starts rolling it to the edge of the sandbox. He gets to the edge of the sandbox, and then he tries to push it up over the edge, and he can't get it. He keeps tumbling back in. And he pushes it again, and it tumbles back in. And his father's sitting in the house watching him do all this. And after a little while, the boy's crying because he can't get the rock out of the sandbox, and he notices a shadow come over the top of him and extend out. And he looks up, and his dad is standing there. And his dad says, why didn't you use all the help, all the strength you had and all the help you could get to get that rock out of there? And he says, Dad, I did. I did everything I could. He said, no, you didn't. You didn't ask me. And his dad reaches down, takes the rock, and throws it out of the sandbox. That's the way God is with us and Christ is with me. I need to be near enough to Him that He casts a shadow before me. I played with this in my mind. Do I want Christ's shadow to be before me or behind me? I think I want it to be both. I want Christ to be behind me, casting a shadow before me, so I know He's behind me. He's helping me. But I want Him to be ahead of me too, and I want to be in His shadow as I follow Him. Because I need Him to help me through. I am not going to get the rocks out of my life without His help. I am not going to overcome my hurdles without His help. So I need to constantly be looking for that shadow of Christ. Sometimes He'll be behind me, pushing me along. Sometimes He'll be ahead of me, pulling me along. But He needs to be a shadow. And I hate to call Him a shadow, but I think He needs to be a shadow in my life. I need to always know that He's there. When I'm driving down the road behind a semi, and I want to pass that semi, the way I figure out if I can pass that semi is I'll back up a little bit, and if the sun's coming the right direction, I can see a shadow ahead of that semi, and I'll know there's a car up there. So I know it ain't safe. Hey, there we go. It's not safe to pass that truck. So I use shadows in my life. Why can't I use Christ in my life to help me get through? God truly is near, and we need to recognize that and stay close to Him. I heard a breakdown of the word fear the other day. The word fear, the F is fear, E is everything, the A is and, the R is rise. Fear everything and rise. Or you could fear everything and run. We have two ways to handle fear. We either rise up to that fear and try to overcome it. Now, that don't mean I'm going to walk out here in the yard and see a snake and grab it, because it ain't going to happen. There's too much fear there still. But I need to make that rise to try to overcome fears. Now, I think I've done a pretty good job buying a riding mower, because that gets me enough far enough away from them. But I can only do so much. There's a comedian on the radio that I listened to a while back with Wendy Bagwell, and he talked about how they used to go to southern churches and they have snakes. He says they were there one time singing, all of a sudden ladies and guys come out with five rattlesnakes around them. I want to find this record again. They've come with the rattlesnakes, and they're all over and around them, rattlesnakes, and the preacher finally says, "Wendy, you tell me if God told you to pick up that rattlesnake, you wouldn't do it? You wouldn't have enough faith to pick it up?" He says, "No, sir, I would not. And he hasn't, and I ain't going to, because I ain't picking up a rattlesnake." Well, I ain't picking up a snake, because I think okay, we'll leave that one there. But we need to fear everything and rise, or fear everything and run. Moses tried to run, did he not? God come to him and said, "I want you to deliver my people. But I can't speak. I'm not eloquent. They won't listen to me. I'm just a man." He tried to run. He did not try to rise to the occasion. Jonah tried to run. We know what happened to him. He got swallowed by a big fish. He tried to run. He didn't rise to the occasion. Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10, is an example I've never heard brought up before as far as trying to rise, but I'm going to try it this morning. Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was the chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the press, because he was of little stature. And he ran before, and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came into that place, he looked up and saw him, and said unto him, "Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house." And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying that he was gone to be a guest with this man that is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, "Behold, Lord, half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken any from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold." And Jesus said unto him, "This day is salvation come to thy house, for as much as he is also the son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and..." Slow down, Doug. "For the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost." I think Zacchaeus chose to rise to the occasion. He was a rich man. He was powerful. He was looked at by people as being somebody of stature. But yet he knew there was something better, and he wanted to see it. He wanted to see Christ when he went by. So he rose to the occasion. He did not let fear overcome him. He did not stay in the crowd and just, "Oh, look, there he goes." You know, like they do when the president goes by. "Oh, look, there goes the president." Probably couldn't see him, but we saw the limo go by. But he did what he could in order to see Christ. And Christ rewarded him for that. But he chose to rise to the occasion, not run from the opportunity. The thieves on the cross. One feared and ran. One feared and rose up. Correct? We're both in the same condition. We're like this man, we're dying. This man didn't do anything wrong, and he's dying. One man said, "Well, he's getting what he deserves," and let it go. The other man said, "I know you can save me. Please help me." And Christ said, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." So fear can strike us in many different ways. But fear can cause us to rise, and fear can cause us to run. I'm always telling people at work, if you see me running, assume something bad's going on behind me, because I ain't going to be around for when it does. And I heard one of my other fellow technicians has picked up on that now. I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing, but you know, if you see me running, assume something bad's going on behind me. But fear can cause us to do one of two things, rise up or run. Hebrews chapter 10, starting in the 26th verse. Hebrews chapter 10, starting in the 26th verse. For if we sin willfully after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour thine adversaries. He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sore punishment suppose ye shall be thought worthy, who hath trodden under foot the Son of God, and hath counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace. For we know him that hath said, Vengeance belongeth to me, I will recompense, saith the Lord, and again the Lord shall judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. A fearful thing. Nothing scared me more when I was growing up than to have my mother say, go to your room, wait till your dad gets home. It was almost as scary for dad to say, go to your room, wait till your mom gets home, because she could almost be as worse than him, you know, because she's the one that could come back from the front seat of that van to the back seat of the van and pop you in the head. Dad couldn't do it. But nothing scared me more when I was growing up than be told, go to your room and wait till your dad gets home. I'm guessing a lot of us have heard that in our time. Wait till your father gets home. Oh, Lisa says she never did. And that's why I married her. She's so perfect. No. But wait till your father gets home. The fear that it puts in you because you wait, you know, and you hear the joking thing, comedians will talk about, well, I went up to my room and I shoved as many pillows and blankets as I could inside my pants so it wouldn't hurt when I got whipped. You know, I never did that. But the fear could cause me to do one of two things. The fear of serving Christ will cause me to do one of two things. It will cause me to run from that responsibility and shirk my responsibility and trot underfoot the sacrifice that he gave for me, or it will cause me to rise up. I'm going to walk out my house tomorrow morning. I'm going to go to do my job, and I'm going to make mistakes. It's because I'm who I am. I'm Doug. I'm human. God knows I'm Doug and I'm human. But he's there ready to say, okay, I know you made a mistake. As long as you'll confess that mistake, I will make you one of mine. I will keep you in my fold. The problem is I get so fearful that I'm just not perfect enough, and I'm not good enough. We're never, ever going to be good enough, but that's why Christ makes up the difference. Christ makes up the difference in our lives. I can ask for technical support all day from companies that I work for, but they're not going to help me. They're going to give me advice. Christ is going to help me get through any of the troubles I have. If this morning you have not accepted Christ into your lives, you should have a fear in your life that you're trotting underfoot the Son of Man, the Son of God. If you have accepted him and for some reason fear has taken over and you've fallen away, we're always given the opportunity to become a member of his family or to restore ourselves as fold as we stand and sing the closing song.